host, Annie Watson, and welcome back to another episode of R is for Rare. This week's interview is with a fellow rare disease teenager named Brenna Jones. She is from the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. If you're from another country, Dallas-Fort Worth area is a huge metropolitan area in Texas in the U.S. because I have some international listeners, so I want to look out for them. But she is from the DFW area, and she is a disability advocate and bookworm on Instagram at Chronically Brenna, and she has a lot of chronic conditions, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's actually pretty common in the chronic illness and rare disease space. We mainly focus in this episode on MALS, which is median arcuate ligament syndrome, MALS. She also has hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which I have two other episodes with HEDS patients. I think that's how you say the acronym. She has new daily persistent headache, or NDPH. She also has POTS, or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and she has a bunch of other chronic conditions, including May-Thurner and thoracic outlet syndrome. But today we focus on MALS, which is a rare disease of your celiac artery. She goes into more detail as to how that affects her life, but the main gist of it is it affects her. She has a lot of GI issues, digestive issues. She gets nauseous very easily and all that good stuff. It's also like considered a compression disorder as well. And she talks a lot about how we talk about education accommodations, especially with NDPH and MALS and all the doctor's visits, because she was diagnosed in the past year and a half to 2 years. So she is like, she's a little bit older than me, so she's trying to finish out high school and just navigating education accommodations and not transcribing to the same four-year graduation path that most high schoolers do. We talk about accommodations, we talk about just books and movies, we just bond over that for a little bit. She brings up a lot of different recommendations. In this episode, we talk about COVID and the vaccine, especially because she lives in Texas and they've been pretty lax about the pandemic almost the entire way through up until this point. I think for the first few months when everybody was freaking out, they weren't as lax. But if you listen to my episode with Sam and Caitlin Ferguson, they also talk about how like pretty lenient the restrictions are there. I know it sounded really that sounded very counterintuitive, but they are very lax about COVID in Texas. She talks about that in regards to her education. We talk about comparison, and we talk about how to identify people with disabilities. We talk about a lot of different things, and we kind of cover all of our bases in this episode. If you enjoy what Brenna is all about, I have her Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram, and her Beacons page, which is like my Linktree page, all linked in the show notes below. And if you like what I'm about, be sure to follow me on Instagram at R is for Rare Podcast and subscribe to R is for Rare wherever you get your podcasts. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, Brenna. How are you?
Hi, pretty fine, just chilling in my bed.
Oh, fun times. So Brenna, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing with your life right now, where you're from, and what rare disease you have, and a fun fact about yourself.
Okay, so I am 18 and I'm currently living in like the Dallas, Texas area. Right now I'm on a break from school, but I'm currently trying to finish out high school. Health issues has made it a little bit difficult, but it's going to happen. I'm going to finish. And I also read a ton. So I have multiple rare illnesses. I have median arcuate ligament syndrome. I have Ehlers-Danlos. I have something called new daily persistent headache. I have some other compression disorders that are whatever. And then I also have POTS. So yeah.
It's a fun time. How many books do you think you've read like ever? Or can you not think of that number right now? Do you think it's like in the thousands?
I would hope so, but maybe not. I hope I've read at least 1,000 books in my lifetime.
Because how many have you read this year?
99, 98. 98.
That's impressive. That's impressive. I don't think I've
not counting the random ebooks I've read. Some of them I just don't count. They mm-hmm. are not worth it.
Oh, hey, that's so okay. That's okay. That.
But 98 that I have officially documented.
Ooh, fun. That's exciting. That's so exciting. So can you tell us a little bit about what MALS is and how it affects your life?
Yeah, so MALS is a compression of your celiac artery. So that's kind of what delivers blood flow to like your stomach and lower organs. Basically, like there's a little like thing in my body, and it's like made this little J shape, and it kind of just compresses that. And basically, it has caused me like GI issues throughout my whole life, like constipation, bloating, stomach pain. And then also there's like a very distinct chest pain that you get with it. It definitely affected, you know, my life, and my stomach issues definitely changes the way I dress sometimes. It changes the way I go out and do things, and it definitely changes the way I look at myself and how I, my relationship with food, because it's hard to eat when it brings you pain.
And how has your relationship with food like grown over time?
It's definitely got better. Definitely, like when I was in middle school, it was really bad, because you know, just middle school is an awful time.
Oh yeah, nobody has fun in middle school.
No. It's kind of just been a process. As I've gotten older, my GI issues have kind of gotten worse, and especially in the past year. But I've had to stop looking at it. Like, I'm not going to stop eating just because it brings me pain. And I still love food a lot. And so I've just had to learn to grow and like, just stop thinking about the pain, I guess, because mm-hmm. there's not really anything I can do, but just to keep pushing on.
And can you tell us a little bit about your diagnosis story, both with MALS, and if you want to, you can tie in the other conditions as well, but tell us a little bit about your diagnosis story.
So it's kind of a long diagnosis story. My health issues first kind of started in 2018. That was when I first started experiencing joint pain, and first started getting daily headaches. Over time, my condition kind of just deteriorated. And so we started to look for diagnoses for these conditions. At the time, I was having GI issues, but it wasn't like our main focus. So we ended up going to the Mayo Clinic, where they diagnosed me with POTS and nuclear persistent headache. After that, so getting those diagnoses helped, but then I was still like just progressively getting worse. My GI issues kind of hit a point last summer where I was just like kind of barely eating, and we knew like this isn't normal. Like I shouldn't be having these pain, like this much bloating with food. So we went to a normal gastroenterologist doctor, and we had an endoscopy, and they did all this testing, but everything was coming back negative. Basically, they just told me I had IBS. So when I finally switched to a new cardiologist who was actually a POTS specialist, he did all this diagnostic testing on me. This was back in December and January. And he's the one that actually diagnosed me with MALS, my POTS cardiologist, which was such a relief. Because over time, it's just like, seems like no one really wants to help you with these GI issues. So after that diagnosis, I was also able to get diagnosed with some other compression syndromes, which they kind of run together. So I also got diagnosed with thoracic outlet syndrome and May-Thurner. So it was, and also at the same time, I also kind of got diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos. So getting all these diagnoses was really like such a relief to me to know that like I'm not making these up. These are like real conditions I've been struggling with. They have a name, like they're real. And I don't know, it was really great. And even though these conditions are kind of like, they have no cure, finally getting answers was like a huge relief. So, yeah.
And how, I know a lot of people in the rare disease community, like one of the girls I interviewed a little while ago said that rare diseases come in pairs, which I definitely believe is true. And I know it can be kind of overwhelming having all of these like acronyms thrown at you. So how do you cope with just having to not only like explain yourself, but like how do you cope with the just quote unquote like burden or weight of having to deal with all of these nuanced conditions?
Yeah, so I think that's really what I made my Instagram page for. Number one, I wanted a space to like talk about my books, but then I also found on Instagram that there's this whole community of people, all these people with these rare diseases. And it was amazing, incredible to meet so many people. And like, I actually learned about some of my conditions from people on the internet. Like I had never heard of MALS. And then I met someone with it, and it was like, it made the process to diagnosis so much easier. I really cope with like my parents. They're like my number one support system. My mom is actually a nurse. And so she's kind of been my biggest advocate throughout all this process. And I've had her to lean on, but then also like finding this community has helped me know that like I'm not alone. This isn't pointless. Like, and to know that like people have told me that like me sharing has helped them also find answers and just like feel seen. So that also helps me to know like that what I'm doing isn't pointless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, same as you. Like I feel like I've learned so much about rare disease and like what to say, what not to say, and just how I approach like every person I interview has just evolved over time, which I love. Like I know, like, I mean, I didn't know another person with my condition until beginning of high school, and I wish I had found this and I'd had Instagram before then, so I wish I had found this community earlier, just so I could have an understanding of like the grand scheme of things and how like rare diseases really aren't, like the community isn't really that rare because like millions of people suffer from these things. So Instagram, like when I go, I tell this to every person and it probably sounds like a broken record to my listeners, but every single time I go on my rare disease explore page, I never leave feeling like self-conscious. I walk away like feeling like improved because everybody on the rare disease space wants to give you answers and ensure that, yes, there's so much change that needs to be done, but we can be the ones that start that change and that they're going to have your back no matter what. And I love that. I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. It's like such a good feeling to know that like maybe when some of us had gotten diagnosed with these conditions, we may have never have heard of it, but now that we're like raising awareness for them, some people might have heard them before they get diagnosed with them or have knowledge of them, and so they aren't going like into these diagnoses blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like just the connection, the easy connection of putting something in your Instagram bio, like you have all of your conditions in your Instagram bio, which I love. It definitely like it probably helps people like know that, hey, Brenna is someone that I can easily like DM or comment on her post to be like, hey, I noticed you have POTS. I noticed you have NDPH. Can I like talk to you about this? Like, I know I've gotten that a couple times. It makes it so much easier to go through something that can be absolutely terrifying, especially as a teen, like for me or for us as teenagers, like it can be absolutely terrifying, especially with
having to look in the long run of healthcare insurance and what do we do after that? Well, after we turn like 25 or 26, like I know that haunts me every day, but it makes being a teenager with a rare disease way easier.
Yes, I agree. It helps to have other people like going through the same experience. And actually just recently, a friend I had known through like middle school and high school just texted me and she was like, hey, you have POTS, right? Well, she said like her doctor thinks she has it. And I was like, wow, no way. And I was like, I was really glad she reached out to me because like, of course, like I'm willing to talk to her about it and like help her out if she needs anything. But it just like, it's crazy how stuff like that, like people, they see this and they can feel like they can come and talk to me about it, which makes me like happy. Because I want to help other people that are struggling with these conditions and trying to get these diagnoses for these conditions too, because doctors suck. And yeah. I know how much they can suck and getting these diagnoses for these rare conditions, especially when you're a young teenager, it can be hard because they'll blame things. Like they'll be like, oh, it's just depression, or oh, you're just being overdramatic, or oh,
it's hormones. It's like, no, it's not hormones. It's not hormones.
It's period pain.
That's definitely one I've heard a lot from my guests who are like young adults. Like, I mean, again, like one of the ones I interviewed, like hers is regarding like period pain, but it's like, I feel like why does that, especially as like teenage girls, like that's like, if I'm going to the doctor, like I haven't experienced this because mine is not related to period pain or stomach issues, but why is that the first thing they go to? If you're at the doctor frequent enough, period pain is out the window. Like,
I feel like it happens especially with like male doctors.
Yes. I would assume so, but yes.
It's just like this thing where they're like, oh, if it's period pain, then I won't have to deal with it. Like, because that's not my responsibility. Like, that's a female thing.
Like, just do your job.
Sometimes doctors just like want to feel that they're right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like with some of these rare conditions, they might have just like never really heard of them, or they aren't like very knowledgeable on them.
Yeah.
I would say bring up this random rare condition when they could bring up period pain or painful periods, which like
every girl has. Yeah. And I feel I've seen this meme go around on my Rare Disease Explore page of knowledge that med students know about common conditions and just basic medical knowledge. It's like this ginormous book, and then it's med students being taught about rare diseases. It's like this tiny sliver, and that's so true. And I feel like it's not talked about enough. Maybe I'm just not looking in the right place on Instagram, but I feel like it's not talked about enough with like med students is where the reform in the medical community is going to happen. Because doctors, okay, I'm not going to like, there are really good doctors. I've had experience with bad and good doctors. I bet you have as well. Every person I've talked to has had their equal experience of really, really bad doctors and ones who are like beyond amazing and life-changing. I bet you felt the same way. But as someone who, I have a sister who's going to be a nurse, and I know she won't go to med school, but I know like people who go to med school, they learn a lot. Like that's a very rigorous decision. And I respect all of the young adults who choose to go into medicine. Like I wouldn't do it myself, but yeah. I respect that decision. It's a costly one, and it's just a very respectable decision. Go you for choosing to go to med school. But at least like provide some detail into some of these rare diseases, because it'll make, they're going to become better doctors that way. Mm-hmm. Not turn us away, and then we won't have to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, like when I got diagnosed with MELS, my primary care doctor, like my family doctor, she was like, whoa, I haven't heard of this condition except when I was in med school. Like she said that was the last time she had like heard about it.
What?
And I was like, wow.
That's crazy. And then crazy.
Also like it's like, you know, the whole thing, it's like, look for horses, not zebras. Have you heard that? Yeah, where they're supposed to look for the most common conditions first. And of course, your family doctor is going to be most trained on the most common conditions because they're trying to treat every kind of patient. But at the same time, I also question, I'm like, are these conditions extremely rare or are they just underdiagnosed because like the health system doesn't diagnose them?
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
like Ehlers-Danlos, because that's genetic. And I'm 90% sure my mom and sister both have it.
Yeah. And I also, and also we're going to get back to this at some point, but I saw you have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, and there's been huge news about hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos. That's
so cool.
I saw that. I think it was, for my listeners who don't understand what I'm talking about, there was, there have been, I think, residents or med students in their residency maybe at University of South Carolina who may have discovered the gene for hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, which is the only type that does not have a genetic marker yet. Mm-hmm. But there's a step in the right direction, and you are like the third person I know that has hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, and I'm like, let's go people.
That's so cool. Like, I know mine isn't like the most severe. Thankfully, I haven't really had to have any braces yet, except for my wrist. I have really bad wrists. But it's like, so I never really thought there was going to be like any kind of thing for it in my lifetime, to know that they found this gene and then they're also looking like forward towards like different treatment things. That's insane.
Yeah. And I like just like the people I've met, I mean, you, I interviewed this girl named Isla who has it, and then a girl named Emily who also has it. I've met them in the span of a month, like probably past like 3 months. And I've only known about it for that long too. And I've been, I just so happen to follow a bunch of people who have Ehlers-Danlos, and I don't really know anybody else on Instagram who doesn't have, like, I've seen vascular Ehlers-Danlos patients that I follow, and then hypermobile. Those are like the two. I know there's like 14 types.
I know. I haven't really met any people with,
I haven't
like
met any. I haven't seen anybody who has any other type, which I may be just looking in the wrong spot, or they're just not on Instagram. But I just, knowing like the extremes of hypermobile, where with you, like you obviously, like you said, you haven't needed braces quite yet, versus there's like, from some of the perspectives I learned, like walking is hard, like just the variety of hypermobile is so varying.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why for a long time I kind of like think it was hard for me to get a diagnosis of it, because I wasn't the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've kind of had like joint issues my whole life. Like I remember having knee pain in fourth grade and thinking that was weird. And I've had like lots of incidents. I was always called the clumsy kid. I was always breaking things. Like I've broken my right wrist 3 times in my life.
What?
And so like, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And like,
as an 18 year old, that's not normal.
No, it's not. And then like once my like pain started getting worse, like I started experiencing really bad back pain, and like my wrists and like my knees, hips, everything would just like feel stiff. Things would crack and lock. Like my wrist, it cracks all the time. I went to a physical therapist and he was like, your joints are extremely loose. And I was like, no way. And that's, and that's, he's like kind of the one that helped me get my Ehlers-Danlos diagnosis. And it was really relieving to know that like all of these things that I've had aren't crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that's like having, like, I mean, having my mom been called crazy and said, I'm just growing, like, and getting a diagnosis is like, it's just like chef's kiss in teenage terms, but like it is honestly like one of the best things that can happen, because like it can just open so many doors. And I honestly am in awe of the people who have a diagnosis but still like are going through other diagnosis process, like a different diagnosis process. Excuse me, because I feel like that's just a whole, like, I can't imagine, like, that's just a type of strength, like mental strength, that I like aspire to have, I guess. I don't know, I'm not trying to be like offensive or anything, but I know like having a diagnosis is like the most secure thing that any rare disease patient can go through, and honestly any patient period can go through. But it's so much harder because these conditions are rare, and like we said before multiple times, doctors don't really know about them, and specialists, I don't understand why specialists are so hard to find.
They are, and then like sometimes when you find one, they're like awful.
Yeah. Or they leave like a few years after. Once you get comfortable, they leave. That's what I went through. I had a sleep pediatric. Okay, there are like 300 pediatric sleep specialists, I think. Like, I don't know if it's in the world or in the US, but they're like really hard to find. And I had gotten like so comfortable with this guy. He was great. Like, I saw him a couple times a year. Like, it was great. And then he's like, yeah, I'm leaving to San Diego. I'm like, dude, why are you leaving me? It came to the point where like I honestly was, it was gonna cost a lot of money, but I was like honestly convincing my mom, like, can we please go see him, because I don't know, this is me as like an 11-year-old, it's like, I don't know if we're gonna find somebody else. We did, but I don't know if we're gonna find somebody else. Like, that's the sad part about this, is that like once you, even if it's like a cardiologist or an endocrinologist, like when they're a dime a dozen, like it's just, I think I'm using that phrase right, I don't know. But also, like
you have specialists, but then sometimes you have to find subspecialists.
Yes.
Like I had to find a gastroenterologist that knew about mals.
Oh.
And that was so hard. And then also like the cardiologist, he's an electrophysiologist. It's like different than just a regular cardiologist. It's like you have to find like a specialist, but then like a sub genre of specialists that are like even more rare.
Yeah. And assume that they're not busy, because they're not like in the middle of research, because these doctors have to keep up with their specialties. So usually they're in some type of research, or they are just backloaded on patients, especially in COVID. Like they're so backed up. And I just, or at least I'm, that's just my understanding of these specialists, because like people are getting like long COVID and long-term COVID, and they're going to these same specialists that we also need. So it's like they're backlogged, they are hard to find. And then honestly, telehealth is like the best thing ever. It is. It makes this so much easier.
It does. I've had a good amount of telehealth appointments in the past year, and it's been so great to not have to waste my entire day driving out like an hour, because I don't live in Dallas. I live technically in Fort Worth.
Okay.
And it's kind of like an hour drive into the city of Dallas, and that's where like all my specialists are now. If because you want to get the good doctors, you have to go into the city.
So
I'm like, I don't waste my entire day having to go to an appointment in Dallas.
Yeah same here with Chicago, okay, I have never lived in LA. I have never lived in New York. I have been through New York and Atlanta traffic, but Chicago traffic is just like, even in the pandemic, when most people still aren't like traveling into the city for work, mm-hmm. like my dad's still not traveling into the city for work, it's like traffic is still bad. And I'm like, seriously? And it's just where like, traffic is so bad like whenever I try to go, and we always try to do morning appointments so I'm not missing too much school, which at this point I don't care. I've missed so much school from in my lifetime from doctor's appointments, I really don't care anymore, which is probably not a good thing, but like it's a rare disease thing. It definitely is, where we're like bonding over how much like time we've just spent in waiting rooms. not like in school. I feel like that's like something that is so hard to connect about.
Or for me, like I missed so much school my sophomore year, which is the year my chronic health issue started. I actually left school the end, like 6 weeks before the end of the year, because I could not do it. I was leaving school early every single day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I technically it's a high school dropout. I like to tell that to people. It's not really like fully true.
Okay.
Because I didn't stop school when I left. And I'm in school at the moment, but a special program through my school because of my health issues. We can talk about that. But yeah, it's funny. I like to tell people I'm a high school dropout.
Hey, it's definitely like education is just a whole other issue. And as I hate to say it, but like I'm starting like my senior year in less than a month. I'm in such denial. Like people are like, are you excited for your senior year? And I'm like, yes, but no, because it means like I have to be an adult. Like, no. My parents are like, you're gonna be fine. I'm like, no, I'm not. You don't understand. And I like dive deep in the disability office like thing online. And sadly, for most places I'm looking at, you have to do like the search thing on their website. I'm like, please make it easy to get to. It's not that hard to type out disability accommodations, but like at least make it like a sub page on your website. But that's a whole nother topic we could discuss. But I just, it's hard also because the schools I'm looking at for the most part aren't state schools, so and I've never been in a public school, so I didn't know what 504s were until my freshman year of high school. And I knew the ADA, like I knew about it, but with public schools I feel like in my area they're pretty good about accommodations. And I just got lucky because my school nurse, her sister has narcolepsy, so she knew exactly, she was on the same wavelength as me. But I feel like, how have school accommodations been for you? I know you said like you had to do a special program now, but how have school accommodations been for you?
So yeah, so I first had to start getting accommodations my sophomore year when my health issue started. And basically the accommodations were like, I had extra time to do late work, and that was, and I could test somewhere else, which I never needed to test somewhere else because I haven't had the issues like with being in a classroom per se. It was, the issue was that I was missing so much school, I was never there.
Yeah.
When I left and came back, last year I was going to do regular like school like everyone else, but online because of COVID. So yeah. I was going to finish out all of my credits. So that was, I was taking 6 core classes all at once. And quickly, I could not do it. Like I could not keep up with that. Like because of my migraines and just fatigue, I could do a couple hours of school a day maximum. And so I was on the verge of dropping out again, but they just added a program at my school where basically it's mostly for the kids that would get in trouble and stuff like that. And like, they can't really be in a normal classroom, but basically it's like a school program. It's kind of like the program that you do for credit recovery, but it's like, we do the full version of it. So we're going through like all this online, and it's like, there's not like, so I have it like a physical teacher, but she doesn't like teach me anything. Like she's kind of just like the moderator.
Oh, okay. And
it's a half day of school. So this past year, I actually got to do all from home. And because of my health notes, I kind of just got to work whenever I wanted.
Oh, that's nice.
It was amazing. I don't think I'm going to be able to do this next year because they've changed all the laws again in Texas. And they made it so every kid has to go back to school in person. Yeah, which is frustrating. It's like they made all the accommodations and then they're taking them away. But it's still only a half day of school, and like I still have my doctor's notes, so if I miss, it's okay.
That's good. So
it's been like a real lifesaver, because if they hadn't have like got me into this program, I would have had to drop out again.
Yeah, I feel like
physically incapable of doing a full day of school like that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, I know like Texas has been relaxed like almost since the beginning. I feel like they were really good about masks and like last, like the first like really hard months, and then just from my perspective from watching the news, they just, I feel like they've been relaxed ever since.
Yeah, no, been relaxed ever since. Thankfully I got vaccinated super early.
That's good.
Last year, but I got this like winter, and somehow I did end up catching COVID, but I was and I found out because I was supposed to go have an endoscopy.
Oh.
And I was not symptomatic at all.
That's good.
And no one else caught it from me. So I did like my quarantine and it was all good. I've noticed that, yeah, not a lot of people are wearing masks out now. Me and my family are right now because of the new COVID variant.
Yeah. And
it's getting really bad again. And if I go back to school in person, I'm definitely going to wear my mask at school too, because I don't trust the kids and our parents, because we have a lot of people around that are anti-maskers. And when the school district enforced the mask policy last year, a lot of parents got so angry and were like protesting.
It's a basic public health protection. I don't understand. Yeah.
And it was like really ridiculous.
That's like,
and like it was their whole argument was like, oh, only like 1% of kids die. And I was just like looking at that and I was like, knowing that it's higher risk for people with disabilities, I was like, they're really saying they don't care if I die.
Yeah, that's just, I've tried to be like a little bit more careful, I know, just because of the Delta variant, and I still keep masks in my car. I'm also like fully vaccinated, but just in like bigger public spaces, like I honestly am trying to become more aware of the whole Delta variant, and I've seen so many like people, mainly like in the news, who have gotten COVID even though they're vaccinated. Sorry, that's, I said vaccinated really weird. Even though they're vaccinated. So that's kind of like been, oh, maybe like I should wear a mask more than I do. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm surprised I was exposed to it in the fall. Didn't end up getting it, but did you get COVID after you got vaccinated?
Yeah.
Oh,
I got COVID in May. Oh. And it was a surprise. Like I said, I was not symptomatic at all. So when I got tested, it came back positive. I was like, oh my God. I had hang out with the friend the day before, and I was hanging out with my friend when I got the positive result. And I was like, So I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Oh no. I mean, how could you have known?
You know, if I had any symptoms, because my only thing was like I had really bad migraine that week and like I was more fatigued. But listen, that's my normal.
Yeah.
So like, we can't really say for sure. But I just kind of take this as like the vaccine really does help. And
yeah, it's like if you can't, to all my listeners, I have said this multiple times. I said it in my last episode. I'll say it again. If you possibly can, if you can't because of health reasons, that is fine. But please get vaccinated. Please. It's like, it's not that hard to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
It's really not. They're like pretty much everywhere now in the US. I know it's different internationally. Finally, Pfizer is sending out vaccines to Africa. I saw that on my Instagram the other day, and I was like, thank you, because their vaccine effort definitely has been like low. And I know with the Olympics, which just started, their vaccine, I think like 86% have been vaccinated of those performing in the Olympics, but like Tokyo itself is really bad. But
I'm really honestly worried for the Olympics.
Oh, same.
Especially because there's been news that Tokyo has had its highest hospitalization rate at the moment. But then also vaccine wise, the people that are getting hospitalized for the new Delta variant are the people that are unvaccinated. And I read this article the other day from like a doctor, and she said that patients right before they get put on a ventilator are begging her for the vaccine. And she was like, it's too late for a vaccine. Like,
that's so sad
at that point, you know?
Yeah.
Like these people that like, you know, listen to kind of like all of the conspiracy theories and stuff like that. They're like, people were like, oh, I thought it was just a hoax. Oh, I thought, you know, like all these things. And now they're like regretting that they didn't get one.
Yeah, I've seen, I know, I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm not naming names. I'm not trying to make this political. I'm just stating something I saw from Axios, a very reliable news source. But I saw they posted something on their Instagram about how a lot more Republicans are realizing that like vaccines are so important because of the Delta variant, which is good. I think the conspiracy theories are just like nonsense. Like it's, they're not putting a chip in you. Like that's no, nobody's tracking you for getting the vaccine. There's no fertility issues either. Like there have been no fertility issues.
No, there was the blood clot thing that had happened to like.
Yeah, yeah. That's the J&J vaccine though. I think be cautious. I didn't get the J&J vaccine. I also have like, I won't ever like say it on my podcast, but I have opinions about the J&J vaccine just from like beliefs I have. But be careful about the J&J vaccine. It still works. It still works. But there have been, because of the FDA regulations, with any drug or vaccine, they have to list every single side effect. That's why drug commercials are so long. So they eventually like listed that there's a very, very small possibility you could get this very rare nerve condition. Mm-hmm. So just be careful with choosing vaccines. But I'm also biased because I did not get the J&J vaccine.
Yeah. But. And then also some people don't get the choice of which one they're given.
That's true. I know it's not really, yeah. The, some people it's not a choice, but just
Pfizer. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I could only get Pfizer because it was like, I'm not an adult and I couldn't get Moderna. So although I have heard that Moderna, more people have heard that have gotten Moderna get side effects, which that's a good sign if you're getting side effects. That means the vaccine is working. It does not mean it's giving you, like, side effects are good.
Yeah.
No side effects means it won't work.
Well, the side effects, it's your body reacting.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, it's... And also I've heard it depends on whether or not you had COVID pre-vaccination. I know that changes the game with side effects. I know it can either be worse or better depending on the vaccine you get. But again, it's all personal experience. It's just, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think it definitely is worth it when you look at like how the rates of like when people do get COVID of how severe it is. And so it's really important.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a little break and then we'll get back to the rest of the episode with Brenna. And we are back. So, Brenna, what does a day in the life look like with MALS and also all of, like the other conditions, if you don't mind adding those in? But what does a day in the life look like with MALS?
So, I wake up. Usually it's my bladder that wakes me up because literally I have to go pee all the time. I think it's just POTS because you kind of just like pee everything out. I wake up. I usually will lay in bed for a little bit on TikTok because I just have to wake up and like let my body like wake up. I usually will get dressed and then I go downstairs where I'll probably sit on the couch and read. Depending on how good I feel that day, I might go out, but sometimes my fatigue and my tachycardia is so bad that like I sometimes just have to spend the day on the couch or take a nap that day. But usually during the summer, I like to try to go somewhere with my mom at least once during the day, even if it's just the store. Usually my evening meal is the worst one pain-wise and bloating-wise. But sometimes I have to change because my bloating is really bad or my codes just don't work for my stomach pain. So I might change. And then I usually, what my mom makes for dinner, I feel like this seems bad, but I never want it because my parents eat this really like low carb, healthy diet. Mm-hmm. And it's usually just like never food that I feel good enough for because I'm nauseous a lot. Mm-hmm. And like I don't want to eat their weird like cauliflower or something. So usually my mom offers to make me something else because she's like, whatever, I just want you to eat something.
Yeah.
That's mom behavior. Also, youngest child, that is.
Yes, youngest child energy. I feel that.
Yeah. That is youngest child energy. Then usually I will watch TV with my parents before bed. And then I might read a little bit before bed. And then I usually fall asleep to watch YouTube videos because I have sleeping issues. I have to take meds like to help me sleep. If I don't, I will just like, I'll be tired, but I'll just stay awake all night and toss and turn.
Oh, okay. Is that because of MALs or is that because of?
No, I don't really know what causes it. I wish I did though. Like sometimes I stay awake because of pain, but this is just like, I can't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. Trust me, I still have bad like nights of sleep. People are like, oh, you probably sleep well all the time. And I'm like, no, there are some nights where I'm like, I felt like I didn't sleep at all. But I feel like with the rare disease space, you're either getting like really good sleep and like narcolepsy, either like narcolepsy.
You're getting too much sleep or not enough sleep.
It's too much sleep. Yeah, too much sleep or not enough sleep. It's so hard to solve those issues, I feel like, because so many things could factor into sleep. And I don't know. It's just so like, is it irregular like sleep or is it like?
I don't really know. It's just like I can't fall asleep. Thankfully, I take like amitriptyline, mm-hmm. which is a med that is used for a lot of different things. They use it to treat migraines, they use it for depression, they use it for sleep, whatever. I take it for sleep because like without it just won't happen.
Oh no.
I also take melatonin.
Yeah,
make me sleepy, and those help, thankfully.
That's good. I've heard, like, I'm not a medical professional, but I've heard magnesium helps too with like a lot of stress things.
I also take magnesium every night.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard a lot about magnesium supplements with stress and sleep. And again, I can't speak from experience. I'm not a medical professional, but I've heard it helps.
I mean, you would see like a lot of people, they can't sleep because of stress or wandering thoughts.
Yeah.
But it's different from that. It's like my body physically won't
shut down. So interesting. It's as someone who, again, like lives and breathes sleep, like because I can't help it, I'm like fascinated by like sleeping patterns. I don't know why. It's just hearing
yeah
it
but
out.
Also, like I can take naps like this, like it's fine.
That's so weird. Yeah, I'm like the complete, again, because of my condition, I'm the complete opposite. It's so hard for me to like purposely take a nap. If I fall asleep like in the car, like out of the blue, not on purpose, that's different. But I can't like purposely take a nap without like sitting there for like 20 minutes. But I fall asleep pretty easily at night, so it's weird. Again, the whole rare disease space, it's like too much or not enough with anything, really, with anything, whether it's like sleep or meds or just doctor's visits. I feel like it's like with anything, it's too much or not enough.
Yeah, but anyways, back to my average day, like, I don't feel like I have that much of an interesting day unless I have, like, a doctor appointment or something, which sometimes in 1 week I'll have a lot, and then, like, the next week I have nothing.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of specialists, or is it, like...
Yeah, so I have my GI doctor, I have my POTS doctor, which is a cardiologist, I have two neurologists at the moment, because... I had switched and she was really great, but she doesn't have the right resources for me. So I'm switching to like a big migraine clinic. And then I have my PCP doctor. I have a dermatologist, which I'm about to go see again because I have a constant rash that I get all the time. I probably have others. Oh, I have a surgeon that we've been talking to about mouth surgery. And then I have like this Ehlers-Danlos doctor that I was talking about earlier who does dual stuff. But last time I saw her, she literally did nothing for me. Like, she's just like, you should do physical therapy. And I was like, wow, thank you.
Yikes.
Yeah, okay. I have all that. And I also have a rheumatologist.
Oh, okay. And then what is surgery for people with MALs like look like? Like, what have those discussions entailed?
Okay, so first you have to go through all the testing to make sure you have MALs, which is usually a CT with contrast that has special breathing protocols, and then also a ultrasound. And so once they confirm that, they also might do a bunch of other GI testing to rule out every other condition, because they want to make sure that functionally your body is working correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had a swallow test done, like, so they've like tested like my muscles, they've like looked at my stomach, like they have to make sure everything is physically like working properly and that's not the issue. And then once that, they usually do a plexus block, which they go in and do nerve block where the mouse is.
Mm-hmm.
And basically if that helps your pain, that is like a good go ahead that the surgery would help you. And so then the surgeon, you'd have to go in and decide like what kind of surgery you need, open or laparoscopic. Obviously like an open surgery is much, much harder recovery. And so then if you're a good candidate for surgery, they would go ahead. It's usually like just like a 1 day stay in surgery and then you have to go into recovery.
Okay. Interesting. And have like, you needed to prepare for those things, or is it something you'll look at in
a few years? We've been looking at it. We've consulted with the surgeon. We think we're going to go ahead and do the block. I've honestly debated the surgery really hard, and I don't know if I'm going to do it yet because it can be risky too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not 100% effective.
Oh, okay.
And some people, they have mouse come back. So like really, I don't feel like I'm severe enough to want to go through with this yet.
Okay.
But if it becomes like worse, and if I start getting even worse and things go downhill, then it's definitely something that I am not against doing.
Okay. Interesting. And what is something you wish you had known about like mouths in general, or even about like the healthcare system?
I really just wish I knew it existed before, like long before I knew about it. I didn't learn about mouths really until like December of 2020.
Okay.
So like, and then I got diagnosed like soonly after. And so like, I just wish I had known about this condition and maybe could have like, I don't know, there's nothing I can really do to help it, but like just, you know, knew about it, could have brought it up to doctors before then. Gotten answers sooner, because even a lot of doctors don't believe in it. A lot of doctors don't know about it. They don't know how to do the proper like scans for it, because you have to do the scan really like specific for it to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I just like wish that like I could have like doubted myself less.
Yeah, I mean that's not something you can help. Like that's just a general feeling you're like we all feel as rare disease patients, and that's not your fault.
Yeah, it's just like even now, even after I've seen the physical scan, like I've seen the mal on like my CT scan, like I've physically seen it, I know I have it. Even now sometimes I look at myself, I'm like, oh, am I really like that? Like, should I really be talking about this? Because like mine's not as severe as other people, or like in comparison, I'm fine. But like, it's so stupid to compare yourself to other patients like that.
Yeah. I've definitely been down the same rabbit hole. I feel like it's kind of, sadly, it's inevitable. I think also because we're both teenage girls, I think that's just part of our like, part of our spiel as teenage girls. Like I compare myself either way, whether it's rare disease or not. But yeah, I feel bad about it sometimes. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Because it's not benefiting me, and it's not benefiting other people either. Like it's dumb. It's just like, I don't know, it's not making me feel any better at all, but about where I stand, and it's not going to make another person feel better if they know I'm comparing myself to them. But
like obviously like any amount of pain is valid for that person, like, mm-hmm. and it's important. Like,
yeah.
Even like people like they'll all the time they'll tell me like, oh my, like it's nothing compared to yours, and I'm like, well, if you're having pain, that's still important to you. And you comparing yourself to me is just diminishing how important like your own pain is, right?
Yeah.
And so I've just like had to think about that a lot. Like my pain, my conditions, and me like getting treatment is just as important and valid as like other people's search for treatment and, you know, pain relief. And that though I have this condition, and though like, no, I don't have a feeding tube, like, oh no, I haven't had surgery yet, like this condition is still really just like overall valid, like, and I have a right to share my story.
Yeah, like it still affects you either way. And
yeah,
if it's not mouths, like it's something else. And I hate to say that, but
yeah,
probably something else. And which, yeah, I feel like just because, again, I feel like the nature of some of the medical professionals who we the community see that don't accept our story, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's hard to like cope with a diagnosis because we almost like, gaslight ourselves. I've seen people where it's like, are you like signs you're gaslighting yourself, which like is like that's a reality, and it's sad. Like I definitely have been like not so much gaslighting myself, but like been like, what if I didn't have this, like what would my life be like? That's my whole like mental health like trigger is like,
yeah,
comparing narcolepsy me to if I didn't have it. But I don't know if you did go through the same thing, but
let's go through that. My biggest, I would say, like thing that just is like very just like kind of triggering for me, really pulls me into a really poor mood and makes me unmotivated to do anything, is when I think too much about the future. Because I'm like, oh, what if I'm gonna live in this level of pain for the rest of my life? Like that's depressing, and it's really hard for me to like, the more you go down that rabbit hole, the more it's just like really hard to just even function.
Yeah I feel like I hate uncertainty, and I think that's a general feeling among other rare disease people I know. And with the pandemic, I think it's a whole nother level of uncertainty about like people always say, like, or at least like my teachers would be like, in 20 years this is kids will be learning this in history class, and I'm like, yes, but this entire 18 month period has felt like 20 years. I just need to get, I know there's still almost so much work with the pandemic that needs to be done, and I'm not saying it's like over yet, but I think once we do get out of it, my perspective of time is just going to get back to normal, and it's just going to make the uncertainty cloud in my head go away a little bit, because it's hard to think about 2, 5, 10 years from now when we're still living in this and we don't know when it's going to end, because as people have said for 2 years now, it's unprecedented. It's now my least favorite word like in the entire world, but it's unprecedented and we don't know what's going to happen. And like, not even just the pandemic, but like with the new president and the Biden administration and just overall like level of the economy and how that plays into healthcare and like all these things, all the info we absorb like really affects us. And I've honestly just only, for the sake of my mental stability, as much as I like want to know what's going on, so I'm not, because of my FOMO, the less I know the better, I feel. Yeah. Like, so I'm not like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but
I mean, I try to be present and I try to care about the things that happen in the world, but obviously like trying to advocate for every single thing and try to be aware of every single thing, it's not possible.
Yeah.
I really kind of try to focus on disability stuff, because that's what I'm most connected to, and that's, you know, my life, and the like the things that I'm trying to raise awareness for are things that affect my life and as I, you know, grow up and become older, so it's important.
Yeah, but the less I know the better. I mean, like the scare, like economy scares, like people, like the fear mongering is not what I need in my life. I need the truth, and I'm not like I believe in COVID. COVID's a real thing, and But yeah, I just try to stick to what I know, like you said. Like, that's what's going to keep me grounded and, again, more comfortable with uncertainty, I feel like. Because if you stick with one thing and you go with it, time flies by when you're having fun. So, so I feel like if we keep ourselves occupied while we're still understanding what's going on, it makes life way easier. That's so broad and vague, but I hope you know what I mean. So what made you love reading? As you said, you usually read on your daily basis, and if you follow her on Instagram at Chronically Brenna, you'll see that she loves books. So what made you love reading, and what made you want to become like a book Instagrammer, bookstagrammer, as they say?
I think it's just like a really great escape. Like, it's like you can go into all these other worlds and like immerse yourself in a story that's different from yours. And it's great. It's also great for like pain distraction.
Yeah.
And then it just makes me happy. Like, reading just makes me happy. And I kind of just wanted to share my love for reading and books and literature with others. So I first started with TikTok, and then I moved over to Instagram, and then I turned my Instagram into both books and then health stuff.
That's so fun. And then what has been, I'm going to ask you two questions. What's your favorite book this summer? And then have you read any books that are inclusive of the disability, chronically ill, rare disease space?
Okay, yeah. Okay, so my favorite book I think I read this summer, maybe it's hard to choose, but I think Daisy Jones and the Six is really good. But one of my all-time favorite book is Sick Kids in Love. It's this love story between two chronically ill teens in New York City. And it's just the cutest and most inclusive, wholesome book ever. Like just to have this like cute chronically ill love story means the world to me. And like, I recommend every chronic illness person read it.
It's called Sick Kids in Love.
Yes.
I'm Googling it as we speak because I need to know where to get it.
It is literally so wholesome.
Oh, I love that.
And it's not like one of those stories where people die. Cause you know, a lot of those like chronically, like where they have like the chronic illness person, like example, Fault in Our Stars and things like that. Or like stuff doesn't work out like 5 feet apart. This isn't one of those. I promise, it's so cute and like it'll make your heart happy.
I need to order this. I definitely is on my. Okay, sorry. I'm like, oh. Okay, this is like so precious. Read like the
book is just like so inclusive. Both the main characters are also Jewish.
Oh.
And there's LGBTQ representation, and just overall, it's great.
That's like. That is just like a book the whole world needs, because the more representation the better. And I don't know, like it's hard to find books where like death isn't imminent. I read a book, I don't know if you heard of it, it's called Love from A to Z, and yes. It's about a guy who has MS and a girl who,
I love that book.
It's so good. I read it last summer. It's about a guy who has MS, like really bad MS, I think it's like terminal for him or whatever, and he is I think he lives in Dubai, and then
no. It was, they were in
Doha. Qatar.
They were in Qatar, or Qatar.
Yeah, and yeah, they were in Qatar, and like the girl is Muslim, and like she gets a lot of Islamophobia at her school, so, and she gets like suspended for standing up for herself, so she goes to visit her aunt in Qatar, and I think he is visiting home for the summer, I think. Yeah, he's visiting. Go ahead.
I think he lives there.
Yeah, he lives there. Yeah. I read it last year, and it was so precious. So precious. And I know, like, even stuff like MS, I feel like it's more prevalent in the media than other conditions, like, but also it's still not like everywhere.
let alone like our illnesses. So it's any chronic illness representation I am here for.
You have to read Sikhism Love then, because it is the most elite book.
I will get it as soon as I can. What is something unexpected that like nobody, something like unexpected or underrated that helps you go through like hard times in life?
Literally, I feel like
I know your answer to this.
Family and friends.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say reading, but yes.
Thank you. Because it's like, it allows you to get out of yourself and get out of your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So you're not that much. But then I know family can be underrated or overrated depending on what people think.
Yeah.
But having good support that you can go to and who won't make it about themselves is great. And then also just like sometimes TV shows, you know?
Yes. Just
binge watch and you can
What would have been your favorite TV shows in recent months?
I'll just have to say overall, okay, Criminal Minds, always fantastic, perfect to binge watch. There's 15 seasons. I really like Madam Secretary. I mean, my parents just rewatched it with me recently. I'm rewatching Queen's Gambit right now.
Queen's Gambit is so good.
Great binge watch is Anne with an E. And then if you do, we can mourn over the fact that it got canceled and never got another season.
Isn't that like Anne of Green Gables?
Yeah.
I loved that book. That book was good.
You should watch the show.
Okay. Yeah. It's on Netflix, right? Okay. And then I've heard really good things about Madam Secretary. I've seen The West Wing. I haven't finished it. I'm in denial of like the fact that I'm on the last season and I don't want it to end. Because I feel like I know where it's going. But if you like Madam Secretary, I think you'll really like The West Wing.
And you should watch Madam Secretary then.
Okay. You're probably too. I will. I've seen a couple episodes like watching it over my brother's shoulder and it looked good. But it's now on my list. It's hard for me to get into longer episode shows. I think the only one I've ever finished is Gossip Girl, just because like it's a guilty pleasure, I guess. But I think, I don't know, it's harder for me to get into longer TV shows because I'm a stereotypical binge watcher. So the shows I binge watch are shorter episodes because I can go through them easier. But I will have to check them out. And I'm like the one person on the planet that has not seen Criminal Minds.
You should. And then also, have you watched Avatar The Last Airbender?
No, I have not.
You should watch that one.
Okay.
And it's also shorter episodes, so you can binge watch it.
Yes. I've also heard great things about that, but I'm also like, I don't know. I'm also like intimidated by like the fandom of Avatar and The Last Airbender.
It's an elite show. I grew up watching it, and when it came in, I was so excited.
That's so fun. There's what, like 4 seasons?
So there's 3 seasons of Avatar The Last Airbender, and then there's like 5 seasons of Legends of Korra or something, which is like the show that comes after.
Okay.
I haven't finished that one, but there's 3 seasons of
Good to know. I have to keep these on my radar. But yeah, I feel like in general, like TV shows are just a good escape from everything. I think we can all agree on that, but I agree. Okay. TV.
But the thing is, I also love watching medical dramas.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I have all this heckin' medical trauma and all these conditions, but I love watching medical dramas. Like, I've seen so many of them. I've watched most of Grey's. I've watched a lot of The Good Doctor, this other one called The Resident. I've seen House. I've seen this random one on Netflix called The Night Shift. I watched Chicago Med. Like, I've seen all of these medical shows.
I have never met someone who has a rare disease that watches medical dramas, I don't think.
Really? Because I have a lot of friends that do.
I feel like it's just, again, I can't get into Grey's. I've seen a couple episodes, like, over my mom's shoulder.
It took me a long time to watch the show, and I actually started it before my chronic illnesses. But I binge watched it the first 6 seasons, and then I left it for like over a year. And then I watched it again, left it.
I know who all dies.
Yeah.
And also the new season is about COVID. And I'm like,
I haven't watched the two newest seasons because I haven't been able to force myself to, because I feel like the first 6 seasons are the best seasons.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Because there are like 18 or 19 seasons.
Yes.
Or I think it's like, yeah, like 18, 17 seasons. And it's still like.
The better show to watch is like House. I feel like you might like House.
Yeah. I've seen a couple episodes of House. That's with like the guy. Like, he looks like he's British, right?
He's not British, but like, I can see why you would think that.
Yeah, he looks like he's British.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I know. I get House and Bones mixed up, and I think they're two different shows.
Yeah, Bones is not a medical show.
I don't know. I get them confused, which is like dumb. But yeah, I will have to check these out because I can't get myself into medical dramas. I also like... I'm fine knowing my own, like, seeing my own blood, but not, like, other people.
Yeah, House is, like, different because basically his whole thing is, like, he's trying to diagnose these people with, like, rare conditions.
Oh! Okay, now I have to watch House.
He's not a surgeon, and, like, he's not, like, it's not, like, Grey's, which is surgery. It's, like...
And I know, yeah. Like, Chicago, from the ads I've seen about Chicago Med, it's not as, like, surgery heavy, and neither is The Good Doctor, from what I understand. It's not surgery heavy? Am I right about that?
That is mostly, like, ER stuff.
Okay, and then
he's, like, a resident, so he's, like, not a surgeon either.
Yeah, like, and he's autistic? Yeah, I never know what the correct language is for autistic people.
It depends on the person. Like, you can either say, like, that is a person with a disability, or that's a disabled person. And it really, it's, you have to ask the person. Like, I prefer disabled person, chronically ill person.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I still, like, am in the process of trying to, like, decide what I like. For like labels, I guess labels are like such a negative connotation with like people, but I still am like trying to like wrap my head around like what I prefer to be called, because it's also like rare disease patient is so like redundant. I feel like it really is, and it's hard to like, I don't know, it's hard. I don't want to like put myself in a box, you know.
Yeah.
And it also is a degree of coping that I have yet to get through. So that's another level of, I still don't know exactly how I want to be like identified with my narcolepsy, because I'm fine just being called narcoleptic, but that's just me. Because I don't, it's so hard to describe what bucket narcolepsy goes into, mm-hmm. whether it's a rare disease, chronic illness, or disability.
I mean, it's like, okay. If you're going based off the official definitions of what a chronic illness or disability is, that narcolepsy is.
Yeah.
Because a disability is anything that disrupts, like, the way you interact with the world or the way, like, you function, basically.
Yeah.
And then a chronic illness is, like, any illness that lasts, like, over a year, or, like, you go and get or the doctor... frequently.
Yeah I never know what, because like I do my podcast for rare disease patients, and I don't want to like sound contradictory, but yeah, I feel like I'm a rare disease chronically ill person still. Yeah. Have yet to understand what I want to be identified by. Again, it's a degree of coping I haven't gone through yet, but again, just a general lesson for my listeners, just ask how they want to be called. And disabled is not a bad word.
No, it's not.
Let's stop that stigma. It's not a bad word. More yeah, often than probably, not, we the community.
I also have the definitions for disability right here. A disability is any medical condition that makes it more difficult to a person to do certain activities or effectively interact with the world around them socially or materially.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, like, how exactly that fits into my narcolepsy quite yet, just because it could change in a year, but
yeah,
who knows.
But you're definitely have a chronic illness, because a chronic illness, yes, are conditions that last 1 year or more and require ongoing medical attention or limit activities of daily living, or both.
Yeah, I knew that, but I didn't know, like, I never know how I feel like I would change it every so often. That's fine, but
yeah,
it's very, like, personal, and I feel like it has to, I don't know. For me, I feel like I would have to put a lot of thought into it on whether or not I would want to be called a certain thing, just because, like, it's, like, your name. Like, people address you as it, and they use it more than you do, so.
Yeah, it took me a long time to, like, really think of myself as a disabled person. And it wasn't really until I joined the chronic illness community and disability community that, like, I, you know, kind of was like, I'm disabled, you know? And actually me using that label has helped me with, like, just kind of like being like, yeah, you deserve accommodations. You deserve, like, things like that. Like, I got my disability, like, handicap placard for my car. So, like, things like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. It can make life a lot easier, but who knows what I'll decide to be called. I don't know. It's a process. I still, like, want to, like, reflect on myself, and I'm, like, really bad at setting, like, I try to get into journaling and stuff like that, but it's hard. I am also, like, if I reflect too much, I feel like I would just, I'm pretty, like, I don't know. It takes a lot of reflection, and I'm not quite there yet, but we'll get there soon. My last question for you, Brenna, is why do you want to share your story?
Number one, I want other people to not only understand that, like, there are people like me out there and, like, what we go through. So, like, non-disabled, non-chronically ill people, I want to help them understand what the life of, like, chronically ill people is like, and to help have them empathize with the community and learn, like, the struggles of our community and help advocate, but then also to help other disabled and chronically ill people with their conditions, with their things, and then help them to get diagnosis, to have support, you know, just to have someone be there to that gets it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having someone who gets it is, like, key. Sadly, it's the hardest part, but it is key to understanding just life in general. And as a rare disease patient, I feel like that's, like, the most important part, is besides diagnosis, like, having people who get it.
Yeah,
makes it so much easier. Well, Brenna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm glad I got to come on.
Of course. I will leave all of the ways you can reach Brenna in the show notes below, and go follow her on Instagram at Chronically Brenna. To all my listeners out there, be sure to subscribe to R is Surreal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and follow me on Instagram at R is Surreal Podcast. Thank you guys for listening, and see you guys next Thursday. Bye, everyone.